I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 118 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. What's up, Sarah?
Hey, Megan.
It's a little early for you to be recording, right?
So I know, we're doing this on a different day.
I think my intensity level might be a little more than yours, so that's okay. I'm going to get you up where I'm at. So the thing we're talking about, this is a really fun topic, and we're actually recording this on a holiday weekend, so we kind of wanted a fun, easy, light topic because our brains are mush.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
So today we're talking about our favorite fictional moms.
I love this.
I know. Well, this was your idea.
It was Katie's idea. We have to give a shout out.
Mm-hmm. Katie, good idea.
Great idea, Katie. Yeah, so fictional meaning everything from picture books all the way through TV and movies,
yep.
Literature. You and I are big readers, and we're always readers growing up. So
I have a bad feeling. I mean, I know you and I each have a handful picked out, but I have a bad feeling that once we start talking, we're both going to just keep thinking of more, and we're really going to have to
contain ourselves.
Yeah.
This is really a lot of fun. And yeah. I have to say, I've been out of the habit of reading fiction for a while now. And even just looking at these lists is making me a little nostalgic and wanting to go back and read some classic fiction. So, cool. I am going to have Allegra, my 9-year-old, has been begging me to do another little segment on the podcast with me. I had her on a long time ago, and we just did a little bit at the end of the show. So we're going to do that again for this episode. So listen all the way to the end. And since we're talking all about books and book characters and our favorite moms from fiction, Allegra and I are going to riff on that a little bit, and she'll talk about what she's reading and some of her favorite characters lately.
That is so fun.
That's going to be fun.
Looking forward to that a lot.
A budding podcaster. So listen all the way to the end for that. So, so first up, our first sponsor today is PrepDish. PrepDish is a healthy subscription-based meal planning service. So here's how it works. When you sign up, you get an email every week with a grocery list and instructions for prepping your meals ahead of time, i.e. on the weekend. The idea behind PrepDish is you shop once. The grocery list is really well sectioned out for you, so you can get everything from each section of the grocery store. And then you prep once. You spend a couple of hours prepping on the weekend, and then all your meals, fresh, healthy meals, are ready, and they come together in 5 or 10 minutes. We did this, and it worked awesome. Not having to think about what was for dinner. You guys know that's a struggle for me. So
yes.
Not having to think about that each weeknight because the work had been done ahead of time was amazing.
I love that. And another thing I really like about this is the focus on healthy meals, because I've tried sometimes plans where you prep ahead, and often they're kind of heavily based on convenience foods and things that aren't really that healthy when you put them all together. So I like that they've got options for different eating styles and different dietary needs, and it's all healthy whole foods.
Yes, absolutely. So if you have a crazy schedule during the week, and Megan, you and I have both talked recently about how ours is a little bit, this is such a time saver. I will say it was a shift for us to do a lot of prep on the weekend, but man, it was such a relief to go into the week knowing that that was all done. And that it was fresh and healthy. So the founder of PrepDish, Allison, is offering our listeners a free 2-week trial. So there's no downside, guys. Free 2 weeks to try it out.
Why not?
And it's just coming to your email. This is not a food delivery service. It's a menu planning, grocery shopping, and prep list. Basically, take the thinking out of it for you service. So you go to PrepDish.com/TheMomHour for this amazing deal. Again, that's PrepDish.com/TheMomHour, and you get 2 weeks free. So go do that, you guys. It's kind of
a
fun experience.
Time of year, we're all trying to get back in the habit of, eating family meals that are actually good for us.
And yes.
So this is a good way to kind of kick that off.
Absolutely. And just to recharge your own recipe bank, you know, with new ideas. Mm-hmm. I loved that. So, okay. All right. Our favorite fictional moms. While I was sitting here thinking about this, I had a general observation, and I'm curious if you agree, Megan. So I feel like moms in really little kid picture books and literature and the sweet books that we read are really little ones. All the moms are like the most nurturing, ever-present, like cuddly centers of their children's worlds. And then I feel like all of a sudden everyone's an orphan or has terrible parents. Do you feel like that?
So,
where do all the mothers go?
Yes, I have noticed this. It's not just, in lit. It's the classic fantasy of the orphan child, the kid who's doing it all on their own. And I think there's just a common, I remember actually daydreaming about being orphaned when I was 10. And I had this fantasy where I'd have to like live on, like I have to make it on my own, you know? Yeah. And that's when books like The Boxcar Children appealed to me. Yeah. Various kinds of like dystopian middle school lit.
All of the Roald Dahl, like every single Roald Dahl character is either an orphan or has terrible parents or terrible surrogate parents. And then of course we get into Harry Potter and
Even those like tween and teen sitcoms that are on like the Disney Channel and stuff. If you really look, most of them, the majority of them, the parents are absent or stupid. So I just think it's a really common thing that appeals to kids. And it's funny, as you say that, I'm thinking about the older kid lit that I picked, and it was all ones where the moms were very present. And I remember actually, even as a kid, even though part of me kind of wanted the parents to disappear so the kids could figure it out, part of me still really wanted that sort of in the background nurturing character. Like, so
where are all your mothers? But I just think it's funny that when I was thinking about the picture books, that you know, the character of mom is very much present. It's often, you know, a mother and baby, like a good night book, or you're putting, you know, the bedtime routine, and mom is right there, and then all of a sudden she's gone. I feel like there's a thesis. There's like a someone's dissertation in there somewhere, not mine.
You could do that.
I also wanted to mention, before we lose ourselves in this discussion of books, that every single book we talk about, we will link up in the show notes. I would eventually love to have a section of our website that's like book lists, because we talk about parenting books, we talk about books for kids, we talk about books we're reading. And I know Amazon and Goodreads have ways to like make book lists and, you know, sort of embed them on our site. So I'm adding that to my list of things to look into. But in lieu of that, at the very least, we will link to every single book we talk about in the show notes for this episode 118 at themomhour.com. So don't feel like you have to write anything down. Hopefully we'll trigger lots of nostalgic memories in you guys, listeners, as we talk too. So Megan, do you feel like we're going to try to cover like picture books, chapter books? I know that's kind of what we talked about doing for this
episode. We sort of talked about doing that, but I think we both have a list here. So why don't we just kind of go back and forth on the list?
I'm going to let you start.
So I'm going to start with a couple picture books, and I won't take too long in either of them, because the other thing that I did kind of realize about mothers and picture books, while they are very cuddly and nurturing and ever-present, they're also sort of like, they're just sort of generic.
Yeah.
So one of the first ones that came to mind was The Mom from Blueberries for Sale and The Mother Bear from Blueberries for Sale.
Yes.
But honestly, I don't think those, besides the beautiful illustrations and the cool, like, twisted plot of the story where, you know, like, Sal ends up with the wrong, kind of being followed by the wrong mother. I don't think there's really anything particularly special about the mom.
I will say, having read it very recently, because it's one of my favorite, and we still read it in my family, she is very free range. It's very vintage in that way, you know, like letting your child go pick blueberries, like, leave me alone, I'm going to pick my own blueberries. You wander off on your side of the hill, little Sal.
Yes.
But
it was it was definitely a very, you know, early 20th century way of parenting that was. And I think I've always attracted to those
kinds
of representations of motherhood and just how different things were and how different we felt, you know, mothers then felt like their roles were in their kids' lives. And the you know, the vintage illustrations are beautiful. And I've just always had so much nostalgia for that book.
Yes.
Another picture book that I threw in there was No David, the No David picture book series. There's no, I don't believe there is dialogue in the book. There, you know, there's text, but it's all basically just David getting yelled at by various
adult
people.
And do you see the mom, or do you just see her hands?
You see her hands and her legs.
Okay. Because it's very
so you never see the mom, but it's like basically, and we had a whole bunch of these. This was one of my favorite series to read to the kids when they were really little. And, you know, the pictures are so interesting and entertaining. Yes. And David is just, he's got these weird like pumpkin, like jack-o'-lantern eyes. Yes. And, you know, it's just a little, it's like a little disturbing, like right on the edge of disturbing.
But I think the little really ones fun. Like that. And it definitely sort of is sympathetic with a toddler's point of view, don't you think?
Yes.
Like, I think we only have one, but I'm very familiar with that one.
Yeah. So it's either like the teacher or the mom, generally speaking, saying, no, David, don't do that. No, no, no. And reading it, you start to kind of hear yourself, like the way you must sound to your spirited toddler or preschooler. And then there's always, in every single book, there's a moment of redemption. It's always the last page, and the mom says, yes, David, I love you, and gives a hug. Or the teacher says, yes, David, you did a good job, or whatever. And there's something about that that I think is very sweet. You know,
it's very sweet.
It's realistic, and yet the mom kind of realizes maybe she's been nagging all day.
Right.
And this little boy needs a little, you know, some attention or love or reassurance. And the book ends on this note where he gets it. And I don't know, something about that. It's so simple and kind of silly, but that speaks to me. So
And actually, it's such a good point that you don't need a lot of text to have the subtext of, you know, a parent-child relationship. Like, that's an, you know, if you mention No David and people are familiar, it's this immediately recognizable dynamic that we right. can all relate to. And there's like no words. So that's
right. right. I love
it. It's amazing. Okay. Well, my first one is also a Robert McCloskey, which who wrote yeah. Blueberries for Sal. Wrote and illustrated, right? He does all the illustrations for all of his.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, and they're amazing. So mine is The Mother Duck in Make Way for Ducklings, which is our copy of Make Way for Ducklings is one of, like, it's a premium copy, meaning it's hardback and it's big. Because, you know, they'll shrink a lot of these books down. And, like, our copy of Blueberries for Sal is actually...
like paperbacks out
of ours is, our Blueberries for Sal is a smaller paperback, but our Make Way for Ducklings is, like, the big hardback. And the illustrations are so beautiful. It's like art. And, yeah, for all the ways, all the things we just mentioned, the vintage illustrations. But I do love this mother duck because she's like kind of a balance between, she's real paranoid in the beginning because they keep looking for a place to put the nest. And she's like, well, this won't do, this won't do, this won't do. And then she has her nine ducklings whose names are like Jack, Pack, Black, Mac, Quack.
yeah. Right?
And the father duck is like, all right, well, I'm going to go down the river for a few days. And she's like, okay, I'll be fine. I know everything about raising children. I think that's an actual line from the book. She says, oh, I know everything about raising children. She just marches them all online. So I love her because she's on the one hand, she kind of worries about where to put the nest and making sure everything's okay. And then she just sort of takes charge and like marches them across the street. They do almost get hit by a bus, but with the help of a friendly police officer, she sort of marches them through Boston. And so I love the illustrations. I love the story. Kids love that book. It's sort of like, it like scratches the adventure itch, even for really little kids, because there's a little bit of, you know, they've got to find danger. Their dad. They've got to make their way back. And, but it's just duckies. So I'm like a sucker for every video of like ducklings in a line.
I love watching ducklings in the water.
Yes,
you know, like with their mom, and the mom is like kind of keeping an eye on them, and one might kind of wander away, and then they kind of ducky around.
Yes, it is like it's nature's metaphor for how we all feel. So
yes,
when my this is a side note, but when my kids, when we're in a really busy parking lot or store or something, I will still say to my kids, okay, do like ducklings, and they'll just get behind me and they'll
behind
quack
you,
and,
like, stay,
you know,
in line.
It was more when they were so a little smaller, but it just makes sense. Like, we got to go like ducklings, line up everybody.
Yes.
And so, yeah. And then I was just going to add that all of the vintage illustrations, you know, which books have good vintage sort of home life illustrations is, the little golden books, like the original ones. And some of them, I think the
like
authors,
I Help Mommy and those.
Yes. All of those. And some of them, the authors and illustrators, I don't know that they are of any renown, because maybe that was just like,
sometimes they weren't even named people. I think.
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe they had like a stable of illustrators.
They did. Sometimes there were like, there were actually just pen names that would be written under, but there was actually multiple writers and author and illustrators. So,
and I could just look for days at the home scenes, and we've talked about this before, but I'm looking at one called Nurse Nancy. Did you have that one?
Don't remember that one.
That's a really cute one, Nurse Nancy. And any of the, like, any illustrated by Eloise Wilkin, who did, like, I think make a name for herself. I think author and illustrator, maybe. But, okay. So that was my little vintage plug. Yeah.
Well, should we move along to chapter books?
Yeah.
So I think that we're going to see a theme here.
Yeah.
and, of course, you know, there's no talk of fiction and literature would be complete without talking about Ma Ingalls, Caroline Ingalls from the Little House series. And, you know, I think that series is one, it's such a unique book series in that it really starts at about a kindergarten level or first grade level and takes you through to adult, like legit adult fiction.
Yeah.
You know, but very clean and chaste, but still. And then the parents are present the entire time, and their importance never really wanes. I mean, Ma is every bit as integral a character in these happy golden years
as she is
in the very first book, in a different way. Obviously, her role changes.
That's so true. Happy golden years? That's the one where she actually, where Laura gets married, right?
Yes,
that's what I remember really well.
And
preparing
the
dresses and
and it starts off with, you don't hear from Ma as much in the very beginning because that's when Laura's off teaching school,
right?
But she's still like a very strong main character. And I think what's so effective about that, I mean, besides the fact that this is of course, like having that vintage mother sort of nostalgia for something we never actually exist, that we never experienced, you know, that those classic mom characters being resourceful and
yeah.
making a apple pie out of green tomatoes yeah. and stuff like that, you know, just
fighting off the fire or
whatever
with your
it was.
Bare hands.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's also this idea, the other thing that I think to our conversation earlier about parents disappearing is Laura yeah. has a lot of adventure, but she yes. has it with the strong mother character. She doesn't need yes. her parents to be killed off to explore the world and have a lot of freedom and independence. And yeah. I mean, by the time she's 16, she's like getting married.
Yeah.
So it's a very different world than we inhabit. And I think it allows her to have both that strong foundation that she comes from and then also like an adult life going on where she's figuring stuff out very young. So that right. I think that that was... all those little freedoms that she was not allowed, but was required
right.
to have,
yeah.
Makes it really fascinating material.
And I yeah. wonder, so I have not read as much like fan information about Little House as you have, but I wonder when Laura Ingalls Wilder was writing, because she was an older adult. I mean, she had to have had a lot of sort of empathy and like, having then gone through adulthood herself, thinking back, right. I've been like, holy smokes, like my yeah. mother was on the prairie with small children. And, right. you know, so I wonder if there's even more sort of, if she's even more heroic having been
yeah.
written later on in Laura's life, reflecting back. It's kind of
interesting.
And
the other thing that's interesting about that is that her daughter Rose helped her so much write the books
yes.
and make them marketable, really.
Right. Yeah.
And so you have to also wonder how much Rose, looking at her mom,
which yeah.
basically had sort of the same
yes.
Pioneer life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like how much that affected it. So I don't know. So I think it's fascinating.
Is your Ma Ingalls like inextricable from the TV character? I can't remember.
To me, they are completely different.
Okay.
To me,
too.
The TV show to me is almost like not even the same people.
Yeah, but I think there are people where the TV show is almost the anchor in, yeah. like pop culturally, and then the books. I read the books. I didn't watch actually a lot of the TV show. I was a tiny bit too young to have it be something I watched like when it was on prime time. So the only time I remember watching it was when I would stay home sick from school, and then I'd watch it like in syndication at like 11 in the morning. So I wasn't right. I didn't grow up on it the way some people did, and I read the books first and more than I did watch the TV series. But I know for yeah. a lot of people that, what's the actress's name?
I'm blanking. Shoot, I can't think
yeah.
of
you guys,
right now.
You guys listening, you probably know.
Yeah.
But that
I watched it growing up, and I had already read the books
yes.
for years before
yes.
I even started. And to me, the books, the TVs was almost like a silly, like, add-on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like the books were really the yeah. real thing to me.
Yeah.
So I actually remember being really annoyed that Charles didn't have a beard, that
right.
Michael Landon didn't have a beard.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, Pa, very clearly
yeah.
has a beard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, actually, that's a fun transition to my next one, because this is one where the movie influences how I envision the character. And that's, I
yeah.
think, just good casting. And that is Molly Weasley from the Harry Potter series. And a lot of our listeners on Facebook chimed in with this one. She's kind of a hot mess of a mom, but like in the best possible way. Like, she has 7 children, right? I think they're all over the place. She's always trying to keep track of everybody. They don't
yeah.
have a lot of money.
Yes.
But she's so lovably protective of her family.
Yes.
And while she's sort of like cast in this domestic, you know, she runs this like overgrown house and this crazy house, but she's, when she needs to be, she's kind of badass also. So I was a fan. I would say I'm not a super fan of the Harry Potter books. Like, I have read them all once. But going through them, my husband is a big fan, and the kids have all been reading them now, and then we've watched the movies. So there are fans of varying degrees in my house, and the casting for all of Harry Potter, I think, is like some of the best casting in all of movies. Like, I've never sat
yeah,
down
really
and watched a movie after reading a book and thought, that's a, how did they know?
It's
like,
exactly
how did they know what was in my
character.
Mind?
I know.
And in the later books, yeah, and in the later books, they have to take liberties with the story. And I kind of
right.
fell off the movies, actually, after the first couple. But I'll never forget watching the first movie and just looking at the casting and the settings and the design, like the prop design, everything, and being like, oh my gosh, it's like the books are on a screen. So props to casting. But Molly Weasley,
yeah.
both from the books and the movies, is so charming and funny and relatable if you feel like
yep.
you've got a whole bunch of kids and you just want to know where they all are at all
right,
times.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, she was one of my favorites. And I have to admit, I did read the first 3 or 4 of the Harry Potter series. I've watched maybe 2 of the movies. I just never really got into the franchise as much as people did, but she was always, she's like the one of the standouts for me.
Yeah.
People that's very memorable.
The whole family is, you know. Yeah. So Megan, maybe you should get one of the clocks that the Weasleys have on their wall that points to where all the kids are at all times. Right. Wouldn't that be useful to you?
It would be very useful.
Jacob maybe is here.
Maybe I don't want to know.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Also, this is like runner up in the chapter book category is, I think Mrs. Quimby from the Ramona books is just a solid... I think she's
very real.
She's very real. And one of the things that's so brilliant about Beverly Cleary is the books are really written from the child's point of view. So the mother is a little bit in the background, but I think there's a good amount of realistic tension, like, you know, Ramona wanting, just being frustrated that her mom's either not available or treats her sister better. There's some real, very real tension. But even given that, the mom's not made out to be a bad mom. It's not like, it's not so dualistic. And I think there's a lot of, I mean, those books coming out when they did, there's a lot of like cultural implications. She goes back to work full time, you know, so I don't,
I was just going to say, like, it's really interesting if you start from the early Ramona books, which I think were written like in the late 60s, maybe, or early 70s.
Okay. And then are they? I was thinking they were earlier. Yeah.
So I don't, maybe they are a little earlier, but they follow through. One of them, I think Ramona Forever came out in the 80s.
Or
like the early 80s.
Yeah.
So things had really changed culturally, and the books somehow managed to keep up with those changes without feeling like dated at all. Like, you know, there's the one where the dad loses his job. I think, so that's Ramona and her father.
Yep.
And Ramona and her mother. Those ones, I think, were like mid 70s, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, 70s.
And then by the time you get to Ramona Forever, it is different. Like, if you go back and read them all now, like one after the other in a row, you can feel the difference. Like, she's writing for a different audience of kids. But they're still, it's still Ramona. It's still the same parents. Yeah. They have different realities, but it still just makes sense and it just kind of holds together. So, yeah, that's a great one. Are you ready to move on to
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Well, it's funny. I actually had Trixie Belden's mom, and I know that that's really, really sort of vague because most people don't read Trixie Belden. So I'm just going to touch on this really quick.
But yeah, talk about it because every time you mention these books, I want to go look them up.
So, okay. The Trixie Belden series, I think, started like in the 50s.
Okay.
It was kind of became famous-ish around the same time as like the Nancy Drew series or Hardy Boys. So it's about kids who solve crimes or solve mysteries. But it's kind of like if you took... To me, I never got into Nancy Drew. To me, she was like older and sophisticated.
Yeah.
She was like a teenager. Trixie is like the younger, like awkward tomboy version.
Okay.
And her friends are like the clean cut wholesome 4-H kids. That's the only way I can put it. So you read these books and it's like so charming because they're just the nicest, like they're sporty outdoorsy kids. They can all, you know, ride horses and swim and shoot and all this stuff. And they have this little club where they solve mysteries. They try to help people and they solve mysteries. And so, you know, what, like the best friend is super rich. And then, Trixie's family, they always say that they're poor, and it's kind of funny because they live in this huge farmhouse. They're not poor, but they're just like middle class, and the mom has to can and clean her own house and make dinner every night and all this stuff. And there's just, again, it scratches that nostalgia itch, and it's that sort of I don't know, retro idea of what it was like to be a parent. But she also seems really like she's got her own thing going on.
Yeah.
Like, she's not super into her kids' lives. They're off doing their own thing. The kids come home and do chores. Like, she leans on them to help run this farm. And you don't get the feeling that she has no life or that she's like this zombie, you know, suburban mom that might have been a caricature in a lot of other, you know, fiction from that time. So I love her. But I also want to really quickly mention, since we're kind of moving into maybe slightly older, older kids or young adult fiction, is one of my very favorite books is A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. And
I haven't read that since I was like 13.
Yes. And I love the mother character, and it's not, I mean, she is, this is like 1914 Brooklyn or something like that.
Yeah.
Poor. And she really is, just making do with hardly any resources, a drunk husband who works sometimes and doesn't work the rest of the time, and she's just very real but loves her kids a lot but isn't like the most affectionate warm mom. She's just making them, she's making them survive basically and not getting a lot of credit for being a nurturing mom. And I just think that there's, that's like the dark side of vintage mom fantasy. But like, she's just making it work. She's making do however she can, and it's heroic, but she doesn't really get a lot of credit for it. And that's a theme definitely through like the first half of the book for sure.
Okay.
So also a favorite fictional mom who maybe isn't as touchy-feely And I don't know.
I would like to
read. Doesn't give you the warm fuzzies.
I would like to reread.
You should. It's so good. Yeah. I think that I probably
I remember loving it. I can tell you exactly where I was when I read that book. It was like the summer before ninth grade, maybe. And
yeah.
I read it on my own. I didn't read it for school or any other. And I like, but I don't remember. I have terrible amnesia when it comes to that. I'm so immersed in a book and then I will forget the story.
And this is definitely when you get totally immersed in and it's long and it takes a long time to get through. But
yeah,
I reread it every year or so and I never regret rereading it. So.
Nice. Okay, I'll do one more and then we'll take a quick break. But mine, I'm kind of going to take us from books to movies with one with one character. And that is, of course, Marmee March from Little Women, but specifically Susan Sarandon's portrayal in the 90s movie version. So this is one where I feel like the movie character is almost like supersedes in my memory the book, and I have read the book more than once and I have loved it, but the character embodiment, I love Susan Sarandon. I feel like this was at maybe like a height of her career.
I think you're probably right.
And that cast, so you know, it's Claire Danes as Amy, Winona Ryder, that whole crew. And I love that movie version, but Susan Sarandon just is like, I don't know, I feel like
was Claire Danes Amy?
No, Claire Danes is Beth. I'm sorry. Kirsten Dunst. Yeah, Kirsten Dunst.
I said
the wrong name picturing the right character. So Kirsten Dunst is Amy. Claire Danes is Beth.
I don't remember who was Meg.
I can picture her, but I just don't think she's as famous. Sorry,
okay,
Meg.
I think you're totally right, because I can't, in my head, I'm like, wait, who is that again?
I don't think she is as famous as the other three. She was great. She was fantastic. Okay. And then, of course, what's his name? Christian
Trini
Bale.
Trini Alvarado. That's what the old Googles just told me. So
okay. And Christian Bale as Laurie. So it's a star-studded cast.
Gosh, I forgot Christian Bale was in that. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
As
that
Laurie.
That movie came out when I was in senior in high school.
Yep.
So I had already read the books, probably the book, like, well, there's also Little Men, but I had read that book like a million times already. So the movie was cool and I really liked it, but in my mind, it's the other.
And I think I had probably only read the book maybe once at that point, and it was just getting into movies in that way, and I just remember loving that movie. It's also, you know how you've talked about how you associate the Harry Potter movies with Christmas, even though they're not always Christmassy?
Yeah.
That is that version of Little Women, because there's a major Christmas scene. I mean, Little Women is not all about Christmas, but I associate that one with Christmas, like the Christmas scenes and the snow, and it's so great. But Susan Sarandon's portrayal is, like, I could just watch clips of that movie. It's just nurturing and comforting and really wise, and like, the scene where Amy throws the manuscript in the fire and like Joe freaks out is just really, really memorable. She's like, she's just loving. She's just a loving mom. And I have a more vivid picture of it through the movie than I do of the book, even though I have read
the
book.
She's loving and firm.
Yeah.
But kind, and always like encouraging the girls to be kind. And, that definitely also scratches an itch for me.
And I feel like even though she definitely subscribes to like the etiquette and the morals and the customs of the day, I almost feel like she like has this little bit of a like progressive streak where she just wants them to be good people. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I agree.
That's maybe me overlaying my own.
I've read the book quite a few times.
Yeah.
And I think I agree with that. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm really excited to talk about our other sponsor for this episode, because it is totally book related.
It's a perfect fit.
It is. And that is Epic. Epic is an app or a website. You can get it on your computer or any of your devices. And it's a library of more than 25,000 high quality popular children's books, specifically for kids in grades kindergarten through sixth grade. And that age group is important for me in what we have loved so much about Epic recently. So what I am loving is my kids can get on Epic. They have their own profile. So I hand them an iPad. They're going to do a little screen time. They have their own little avatar. So it says Allegra. She clicks on it. It knows how old she is. And she can search anywhere. There's audiobooks, there's read to me books, there's regular ebooks, there's also videos and quizzes and articles and some fun stuff, but it's all age appropriate. So I have not been comfortable yet turning over Google to my
nine and a half year old
for things like school research, or if she's just interested in learning more about something. So I have really struggled with wanting to give her more freedom, but not wanting to give her the entire internet. And I'm sure other parents can relate. So I love that there's this many books and articles and videos in EPIC, and it really does stop at about age 12. So there's nothing inappropriate that could
come up. That's so smart.
Which means they can tool around, and even Violet can tool around, and there's little books where a voice will read to you. There's ones where she can look at the pictures. There's audiobooks that they can listen to. There's no in-app purchases or anywhere they could go that wouldn't be appropriate. So it's really fun to see some of the classic books that they've got in there. We were out of town recently, and I was able to read a Berenstain Bears book to Violet just on the iPad because we had our EPIC up there. And it was like a classic. It wasn't a book that, you know, we weren't familiar with or whatever, but it was right there at our fingertips. So, it's just been so much fun to try out, and my kids are loving it, and I am loving it. So
we have a great deal as well, because you can get unlimited access for just $7.99 a month, which is great, because think about that, like access to that many books.
Yes.
For $7.99 a month is amazing.
Yes.
But you can also get 2 months free with our promo code, which is Mom Hour. Again, that's just Mom Hour. And, you know, you could get the 2 free months now and then maybe ask for a subscription for the holidays.
I think that would be such a great...
Grandma and grandpa or something like that.
Such a great idea. Yeah. There's so much I want to mention about this. There is offline viewing as well. So if you're going on an airplane or something, this happens to us a lot, you can grab a couple of books to read offline, so you don't need to be connected to the internet.
Which is usually when you want to have something available for the kids to look at, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, Allegra used it for research the other day. She came home needing to look up something about robots. And I was like, why don't you try EPIC? And she found a great nonfiction book. So it works great for homework and research. I have heard that teachers and schools are starting to use EPIC, and then you can sort of sync up with your child's reading list at home. Oh, I know the other thing I was excited to mention. They will send you an email about your kids' progress. So I'm not particularly like tracking my kids' reading progress, but it was so fun to get an email where it said Allegra read for 29 minutes and on this topic, and she looked at a book about cupcake recipes, and I was like, also, of course she did.
Don't you feel like that could be like such a great solution for the reading log slog this time of year? Because like my kids would be like, I read how long? I don't know. Yeah. I lost count. And then I didn't pay attention either. So actually you kind of know if you're totally fudging or if it was anywhere near the truth.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, so smart.
Exactly. Yeah. The way you get EPIC is go to getepic.com. Use the promo code MOMHOUR and get your 2 free months. Just go do it, because there's no downside.
No downside.
2 free months. I will say for our listeners who have really little kids, there's plenty on there. If you're not at the place yet where you're just handing an iPad to your toddler, more power to you, mama. But if you're not there yet, there's lots you can do with your child. You can read to them. You can do the read aloud ones. And there's short educational videos and stuff for really little kids. I know Katie tried it out as well, and her kids are really young. So why not get 2 free months? So it's getepic.com, promo code MOMHOUR. And when those 2 free months run out, I'm all about, I think that's a great idea. Ask for a subscription for the holidays from the grandparents.
And that promo code does expire mid-October, so October 15th. So get on it.
Get on it now. Get EPIC.
Get it.
All right. Okay, so let's get back into this. Megan, did you see I posted this to Facebook and Instagram, this question?
Oh my gosh. You and I have talked about the fact that we've never watched the Gilmore Girls. This is not the first time we've talked about this, by the way.
I don't know. I feel like we might be outing ourselves. We've talked about it ourselves, but I don't know if we've ever told our listeners that.
Oh, no. We've never told our listeners.
Okay.
I have mentioned it, though.
Yes.
I don't remember when, but we definitely had this conversation a while ago. But that was one of the ones that kept coming up that people said was one of their favorite fictional moms.
Yes, is Lorelai Gilmore from the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
And now we have to tell you guys that neither Megan nor I has ever watched a single episode.
Not
of the
a
Gilmore.
Single episode. I have seen ads for it.
Yeah.
So I know who's in it.
Oh, I know what they look like. They're very
pretty.
I know
they look like. And I have some vague idea of what it's about, sort of.
They
but
talk
I just
fast.
Never, it, you know, it was, it came out at a that show really got popular at a time that I was watching zero TV, and especially not any network TV whatsoever. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. We can't really can't really chime in on that conversation too
but
much.
Literally 90% of the people who commented on Facebook and Instagram, and we got a lot of comments about your favorite fictional moms, it was pretty much all Lorelai Gilmore. So we're gonna throw her out there. She is a favorite fictional mom. She's just not one of ours because we've never seen it. Don't hate us.
And we probably aren't gonna start watching it.
No, probably not. I mean, unless you like give us a week away from home and all expenses paid, then I'll watch it.
The only requirement is we have to watch it.
Yeah, I'll watch it. I will link up those threads in the show notes because it's fun to see what other moms, because there were some other really great suggestions too. Some that were similar to ours and then some that came out. I know, are you a Friday Night Lights?
No.
Okay, because that's a show I would like to watch because I always hear good things. And I know several listeners love.
I saw the movie, but I never saw the show. Right. I never got into Parenthood. I never got into Modern Family. I just missed that whole thing.
You know what we realized is all of the TV shows that you and I like have terrible people in them. That's true.
That's the way we tend to go with it. You know, we're such good people in our normal lives. We just have to escape a little bit with these terrible people, right?
I'll take that spin on it. Okay, so why don't you give us a TV mom?
Okay, well, this one, I don't know. I don't think she's going to be controversial. The show, it's probably not that, is probably out of favor. But Claire Huxtable from The Cosby Show. Mr. Cosby's rotten actions aside, she was so cool. What I loved about Claire Huxtable's, she had five kids. At the time, I didn't know that I was going to one day have five kids, but came from a big family, and I liked that she was professional, but very involved in her kids' lives. She was super no-nonsense, but still, like, warm and kind, but also would not hesitate to, you know, put a kid in his place.
Yeah.
And very realistic. And she had high expectations, but the kids were allowed to be who they were. They weren't all just like little, you know, doctors and lawyers running around. I just loved her. She's just like everything I wanted to be, like in an 80s mom.
Yes. You know? And she, Felicia Rashad is such a, I think she was comedically hilarious in that show.
Yes,
and that was one of the first sitcoms that I really watched as a kid. But even like thinking about reruns and clips, I mean, she's funny, really, really funny. And I love a good funny actress. So that's a great one. And
she really, really is.
Several of our listeners mentioned her as well. Okay, so I've got one from a movie. And it's one of my favorite movies, really in my top 10 all-time favorite movies. And that is Almost Famous, which I love the entire movie. But Frances McDormand plays Elaine, I had to look up the character's name, who is the mom of the kid who runs off to follow the rock band. And I don't know, I feel like I could rewatch this movie tomorrow and maybe I'd even have different opinions of this mom character. I just feel like she's such a, she doesn't have a lot of screen time in the movie and she steals every scene. She's super intense. She's like completely lost control of her family. And so she's a little bit at the end of her rope, but she is appealing in some way. So
she really is. First of all, Frances McDormand is amazing in everything she's
amazing.
In. So it's really hard not to love any character. And even though the characters are conflicting and complicated often, I still always love them. But I just rewatched Almost Famous. Was it with you? Because
I used to rewatch it a lot. Like I used to watch it a lot and I haven't watched it in several years probably.
There's a part where she's on the phone with the boy.
And he's in the hallway.
The end.
Yes.
Yeah. Doesn't she tell him, she doesn't say make good choices, but she says like, remember who you are or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, it was kind of, I remember being like really inspired by that conversation because here she is freaking out.
Yeah.
Because she has no idea what's going on with her kid. She knows he's fallen in with, you know, a bad element.
Yeah.
And she's just trying to bring it back to his moral compass, really, which is what that which is,
and that's all
about.
She can do because he's so far away. And she's just, and then when she gets all maternal with, with the rock star who's played
the rock
by,
star, yes.
Yeah. And I love that she just, she's sort of like can't help herself. Like she's a mom to the core. So great performance. I'd rewatch it. I feel like I didn't have as much to say because it has been a while. I just know that I love her.
Yeah, so. I love it. Well, I have another movie mom that I love that's on this list. The mom from A Christmas Story.
Okay, you're going to have to set this up for me because that movie.
You've never seen this movie?
Well, I have, but I feel like it's always on in the background and I haven't done like a sit down and watch it since maybe I was a kid. This is where my pop cultural ignorance.
This is a vintage mom. Yeah. You know, this is kind of my theme here, but she's, it's like depression era I think it's the 40s. And so she's like a housewife and has these two little boys and it's very real. It shows like the frustrations of her trying to like get her kids into these immense snowsuits. And, you know, in those days they probably didn't even make them easy to get on. You know, or like trying to get her picky eater kid to eat. And she's goofy and silly and sweet. And I love her. She's like one of my favorite but real, just like really, yeah. Her hair is crazy. Her hair is always like going off in a million directions. And I can't remember the name of the actress. Cause I feel like it's one of those where that's such an iconic role for her. Yeah. I know she's been in other stuff, but all I can ever think of is.
And I can't even picture her. That's just one of those movies where it seems like every time I see it, it's in clips and all chopped up. And
you should really sit down and just watch it beginning to end, not with commercials, and just watch the whole movie.
Yeah.
And your kids are all at a good age that, well, Violet won't care, but your other kids will probably enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of that, a listener mentioned the mom from Home Alone, which is another Christmas movie. And that is a great performance by her.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a really silly one. And that is Mrs. Pteranodon from PBS's Dinosaur Train for all you PBS. there's a lot of terrible, annoying mothers in like really young children's programming, just because a lot of that programming is in itself annoying. I love Mrs. Pteranodon. So first of all, she adopts the T-Rex who's like hatches in her nest and she doesn't even know where he came from. And she's like, sure, you could be in our family. So that's cool from the beginning. But I feel like every episode she's like a little free range. Like they're always kind of off doing their own thing, but she still has control and she takes them on really cool, like educational adventures. And her kids are like all very different and like sometimes get into a little trouble, but she's just got her head on straight, Mrs. Pteranodon. So if I had to pick,
it's been a long. I think Dinosaur Train was kind of getting big just as my kids were out.
Yeah, yeah,
it,
so. You weren't. Yeah, I wasn't thought that one probably missed you. But yep. It's a cute show, and I just, even though I don't sit down and watch those shows with my kids when they were watching them, I even remember just being in the other room, be like, I like that mom.
Yeah.
So does this lead us to a cartoon mom that you're not? So okay, so we're gonna do one or two bad moms each, real quick. Fun lightning.
Okay.
Worst moms.
So I have to say Caillou's mom is just the worst. I don't know what it is. First of all, she looks like a giant toddler. Like she dresses like a toddler. I know part of that's because the whole show is primary colors.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure there's anything besides like,
I think you're right,
red, yellow, and blue in that entire show. And if there is, like, you don't even notice it. So she dresses like a toddler, but she's shaped like a toddler. Something about her hair is toddlerish. Something about her is just off to me. And then she's just, I feel like she kind of hates Caillou. I feel like every time Caillou...
Don't you kind of hate Caillou?
Well, of course I do, so I get it. But it's like none of the adults want Caillou around. She always seems like she's just really irritated with Caillou.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just, every time that show, Caillou's bad enough, but then add in like the mom and I just can't stand it.
Yeah.
And I have to not watch it.
Yeah. So. That's a pretty good one. Okay. Well, I have two of the worst moms from two of my favorite shows of all time. And the first is Betty Draper from Mad Men. Especially like the first four seasons.
Yes. But she's so bad. It's fun to watch.
She's so bad. So there's a great video mashup that I watch like every time. Well, every season that Mad Men would come back, I would watch it and share it. And I will link it up in the show notes. And it's a mashup of like Betty Draper's Guide to Parenting, basically. And it's all her saying, Bobby, stop it. Go upstairs. Sally, turn off the TV.
And she's smoking and having a martini or whatever.
She's so bad. Yes. So that's just glorious.
But she never gets better.
No. She's
just
terrible.
She gets weirder.
It gets real weird. And then, and then the other one from our favorite, Veep, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, Selena Meyer on Veep, is possibly the worst mother in the history
of
mothers.
She's terrible.
I mean,
terrible.
It's supposed to be funny and it is funny.
But it's cringy.
It's so bad, it's cringy. Like you almost just want her, even though you know it's funny and it's tongue in cheek, you just want her to be nice to Catherine sometimes, and she's
just sometimes,
so bad.
And she'll kind of seem like she's about to, and then it's always like it doesn't last, or she did it for the wrong reason.
Right. It's always for her own personal and political gain.
Yes.
And Catherine is like the biggest disappointment and annoyance to her. And the actress who plays Catherine is Kiefer Sutherland's daughter.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And she is great. And
she is great.
I mean, that is like one of my favorite shows.
Yeah. And I guess to round that out, one that I thought that I forgot to mention before was the mom from Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And the great thing about her is that she's terrible.
She's so bad.
Lucille. But you don't even care because everyone else is terrible. So everyone's terrible. So it's like, whatever. She's, you know, like the daughter and her have this terrible relationship. Yeah. But what's it? Lindsay. Lindsay's awful. So it's like they're all terrible people.
I don't know who that actress is, and she's got to be famous because
she is, and of course I can't think
just
of it,
don't
but...
know what else she's been in, but she's amazingly terrible, a horrible on purpose.
Bless me, goodness gracious, I'm having like problems with my sneezes and stuff today, but I'm looking it up right now because I have it's a famous name, and when I say it oh my goodness, why isn't it not coming up?
That's
Jessica Walter. She's
oh
just,
yes
I mean yeah
Yeah.
Yes. She's okay. been around a long time and she's so funny. And that wink.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She's evil. Like evil, but just, yeah, it's a great show. So yeah, we ended on very bad moms on purpose, like yes. moms that we love to hate, which is probably more of the TV that you and I watch, honestly,
right.
is that snarky stuff. But this was really fun, you guys. I want to remind our listeners of a couple things. Everything we talked about, especially all the books that you're going to want to go order if you choose, will be in the show notes at themomhour.com. This is episode 118. And go get Epic. GetEpic.com, promo code MomHour. And that will get you 2 free months of Epic, which has over 25,000 high quality popular children's books, and your kids can surf around, search around, browse around without you worrying about what they're getting into. It's one of my favorite features. And then, yeah, stick around because Allegra and I are doing just a little segment on some of the books and characters that she is into lately. So that will be fun.
Very, very fun. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
We'll be back next week. Bye, guys. Hey guys, I'm back here with Allegra, who's my 9-year-old daughter. Hi, Allegra.
Hi, Mommy.
So Allegra wanted to come on and talk a little bit about some of her favorite mom characters from books and movies and TV. So she's thought about this. So Allegra, who's first? Which is your favorite mom from a book?
The Wrinkle in Time mom is really nice.
Okay, so I have to confess I didn't read Wrinkle in Time when I was a kid. What do you like about the mom from Wrinkle in Time?
She's really smart. And she takes care of her kids well and is very open to Meg's friends and encouraging.
Oh, I love those things. She sounds awesome. So your teacher's reading you Wrinkle in Time out
yes.
loud, right? In fourth grade, which I love. I know it's a really popular book. I just never got into it. So, okay, do you have one from a movie in mind?
Yes, the mom from Beethoven.
Okay, so we watched Beethoven. Beethoven is, I don't know, 25 years old or so. So our listeners probably watched it when they were kids. So we just watched it with you guys kind of recently, and it's funny, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you like? That mom is played by an actress named Bonnie Hunt, who's very funny. What do you like about her in the movie?
She's funny
mm-hmm.
and nice and... She says sorry when she does things wrong.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they have quite a challenge with that
yes.
big dog. And the dad is kind of stressed out.
Yes.
I remember that about it. Okay, and then you picked one from TV that surprised me. So why don't you tell everybody which one you picked from TV.
From TV, I picked Lloyd's mom from the Lego Ninjago TV show.
Okay, so the Lego Ninjago is a TV series. Do we get it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Where do we get it?
So I think it's on
Netflix. One of those TV series created about the Lego characters from Ninjago, which I have to say, I would not have thought that there would even be a mom in there. But you think she's a good mom?
Yes.
And it's Lloyd's mom?
Yes, Lloyd's mom. He's the chosen green special ninja.
Okay, and he's got a good mom. Who knew? So let's talk a little bit about Epic. You have been using the Epic app, and they are our sponsor for this episode. Are you enjoying that?
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you like about Epic?
They have a lot of good history books, but also storybooks. And I like their information ones. I read one about Alexander Hamilton. It was my favorite founding father. And they told me information that I didn't know about him.
Yeah, from any of the other books that you've gotten that you found out.
I've read a lot of Hamilton books.
Yeah, you have read a lot of Hamilton books. It was great when you came home and needed to do some research for homework the other day, and you were able to just fire up Epic and search around, and we didn't have to worry about
robots.
Yeah, about robots. And we used it when we were on vacation in Denver recently.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember? What did you look up?
I looked up...
It was your favorite, Ivy and Bean?
Oh, yes.
So there's a book series yeah. called Ivy and Bean, and there's one that's Allegra's favorite, and we don't have it at home.
It's the only one we don't have.
Yeah, and there we had it, right, in Epic. So our listeners get 2 free months of Epic. Do you think they should
yes.
check that out? I do, because
yeah.
it's free. All right, well, Allegra, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.